Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading from the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 7, which is entitled, What Prahlad Learned in the Womb. Today's text is 50, right? Devo Sura Manushova Yaksho Gandharva Evava Bhajan Mukunda Charanam Swasti Man Syadyatavayam Devo Suro Manushova Yaksho Gandharva Evava Bhajan Mukunda Charanam Swasti Man Syadyatavayam Devo Suro Manushova Yaksho Gandharva Evava Bhajan Mukunda Charanam Swasti Man Syadyatavayam. Please chant. Yaksho Gandharva Evava Bhajan Mukunda Charanam Swasti Man Syadyatavayam Devo Suro Manushova Yaksho Gandharva Evava Bhajan Mukunda Charanam Swasti Man Syadyatavayam. Vaishnavis. Devo Suro Manushyova. Yaksho Gandharva Evava Bhajan Mukunda Charanam Swasti Man Syadyatavayam. Okay, synonyms. Devaha, a demigod. Asuraha, a demon. Manushyaha, a human being. Va, or. Yakshaha, a yaksha, a member of a demoniac species. Gandharvaha, a gandharva. Eva, indeed. Va, or. Bhajan, rendering service. Mukunda charanam, to the lotus feet of Mukunda, Lord Krishna, who can give liberation. Swastiman, full of all auspiciousness. Syat, becomes. Yata, just as. Vayam, we. Prahlad Maharaj. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. If a demigod, demon, human being, yaksha, gandharva, or anyone within this universe renders service to the lotus feet of Mukunda, who can deliver liberation, he is actually situated in the most auspicious condition of life, exactly like us, the Mahajans, headed by Prahlad Maharaj. Please repeat, if a demigod, demon, human being, yaksha, gandharva, or anyone within this universe render service to the lotus feet of Mukunda, who can deliver liberation. He is actually situated in the most auspicious condition of life, exactly like us. Then in parentheses, just to explain, the Mahajans, headed by Prahlad Maharaj. Because Prahlad Maharaj is speaking, and he's referred to himself in the plural because he's a member of a very, very exclusive club, the Mahajans. How many Mahajans are there? Right. And he's one of them. How did he know? He was only 5 years old. How did he know he was one of the Mahajans? Yes. He found out from his guru. Srila Prabhupada's purport, very short. Prahlad Maharaj, by his living example, requested his friends to engage in devotional service. Whether in demigod society, asura society, human society, or Gandharva society, every living entity should take shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda and thus become perfect in good fortune. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deshtarine. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmulitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtang Stapitang Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandehang Shri Guru Shri Utapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangsha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvatam Tangsajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvatangsha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhuve Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasa Hare Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Prahlad Maharaj is describing the process of perfection to his fellow 5-year-old classmates who are all born in demoniac families. But here he's explaining that this process is applicable to everyone. Quite often when we hear the word demon, we conjure up, like nowadays they have all these, they don't call them video games anymore. What do they call them, these online games that the kids play? Well, even adults play them. Huh? No, these games, whatever they call them, the Xbox and all that, these games that they play, they don't call them video games anymore. Because they still call them video games, yeah? Anyway, so these games, when they, you know, they have these demoniac people they have with tusks and, you know, long nails, 3 feet long and stuff like that. But that's not what really constitutes a demon. It's not your appearance. If you read the 16th chapter, Krishna clearly gives a description of what is a demon and what is a godly person. And interestingly, he points out, Pravritim cha nivritim cha jana navidur asura nasocham napichasura nasatyam teshu bidyate. This is the beginning of understanding who is a demon, who is not a demon. Pravritim cha nivritim cha. Anyone who doesn't know what they should do and what they should not do, they're flirting with demoniac tendencies. In other words, at every moment of your life, you should know clearly what you should do and what you should not do. Sometimes it's critical, like if you have a job assembling bombs, you better know what goes where. Otherwise, you're not going to last very long. But in general, when we're walking down the street, looking here and there, we don't feel that it's so critical to know what to do and what not to do. But it is at every moment, because every mistake that you make is cementing your continued existence in the material nature. And we don't want to be here. So it's like if you woke up one morning and all of a sudden you're in a place where bombs are falling, you immediately don't want to be there. You want to get out. Right? Like the story of some Gurukula kid, born in ISKCON, went off and joined the military, went to the first Iraq war, and was on recon all night, driving in the desert, You know, if you've ever been in a desert, it's a desert. There's no landmarks. There's nothing. There's just sand all around. And they're out doing recon late at night, him and another buddy. And they fell asleep driving. And he woke up to the sound of bombs everywhere. You don't know if it's friendly fire, if it's the enemy or whatever, because they don't know where they were. They're out in the desert. So what did he do? After many years of not saying Krishna's name, the first thing came was Krishna. So at least he knew that much to do. So at every moment, we have to know what we should do and what we should not do. Otherwise, we're flirting with demoniac tendencies. Parvartimcha, nivartimcha. Jananavidur, asura. Nasocha. Unclean. Socha means clean. Nasocha means no cleanliness. So if you find yourself living in a, you know, less than clean situation, your room is not clean, your clothes are not clean, your mouth is not clean, this is all demoniac tendencies. We're every moment, as clean as possible. As soon as you eat something, the mouth should be washed. Not like I eat and then I go off and hours later think, oh, let me eat again. No. Real cleanliness for biblical cultures, as soon as you eat something, you have to wash your mouth. As soon as you go to the bathroom, you have to wash. Take a bath if you pass through like that. And if you don't, you can be, not only are you flirting with demonic tendencies, you could be attacked by demons. And just a story from the Mahabharata. This king Kalmashapat was a saintly person, pious king. But one day, somebody was his enemy and always wanted to send a ghost to attack him. But he was so pious that the ghost didn't have any way of attacking him. But one day he went to Pastul and didn't clean properly. Ah, the ghost took the opportunity. He's unclean and possessed him. It's in the Mahabharata, true story. So he became so demoniac after being such a pious person all his life. He became so demoniac. He was killing devotees and eating them. That's how demoniac he became. He was killing devotees and eating them. He became a rakshasa. So one day he approached the great sage Vasishtha, a very powerful brahmana, and tried to attack him. And Vasishtha was so powerful, he just went hum, and he froze. The king, Rakshasa, froze. He couldn't move. That's how powerful those brahmanas were. They just have to say one word, hum. And he was like completely frozen. So it's very serious. When Krishna says, this is God speaking, we should take every single word of the Bhagavad Gita extremely seriously. It's not like your buddy or the barber around the corner. No. Everything in the Bhagavad Gita is being spoken by Krishna, Arjuna, Sanjaya, but every word, Dhritarashtra, a few words in the beginning, but every word is important. Every word is to be meditated upon. Asocha, napichachara, no good behavior. Achar means good behavior. No good behavior. So we see people who don't behave, it's not surprising they don't behave properly because they're flirting with demoniac tendencies. Nasatyam, teshu bidite. Satya means truth. So, nasatya means untruth. Liars, in other words. It's stated in the first canto that Mother Earth can bear any weight. She's bearing the weight of all these heavy mountains, oceans, but she can't bear the weight of one liar. That's how important it is not to tell lies. Mother Earth, Bhumi, who's carrying so much weight on her back, she can't bear the weight of one liar. So Krishna's explaining in that one verse demoniac tendency, so we can look. So it is said that in the beginning of creation, the demons and the demigods lived on different planets. Then, on the same planet. Then they started taking birth in the same family, and in Kali Yuga, they take birth in the same person. In other words, we have both divine and demoniac tendencies. So the Krishna consciousness movement means cultivate the divine tendencies. You should know what they are. If you don't know what they are, how can you cultivate them? And stay away from demoniac tendencies. Again, you have to know what they are. Otherwise, how can you avoid them? That's why Krishna explains in the 16th chapter, which is entitled The Divine and Demoniac Natures. If you know what is the divine nature and what is the demoniac nature, then you know what you should do and what you shouldn't do. But if you don't take the time to study that, and if we just roll along with society as it's going, then we won't come to this point of wanting to take shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda. We don't see it as being important. Balagopal gave class, he was saying how important it is to have Sambandha Gyan. Yes, if you don't have the Sambandha Gyan, the basic knowledge, basic existential explanation, then you can't reach to the topmost goal of love of Krishna. It's not possible. Take a very, very long time. One has to understand clearly. For instance, yesterday there was some discussion at the end of the class. I left right when the question started, and there was some discussion about where the hellish planets are situated. And Amala Bhakta made a statement that some devotees didn't, not that they didn't accept, but they weren't sure, so they came to me to ask. And yes, he was right. In the fifth canto, 26th chapter, which explains the hellish planets, I think verse 5, I'll read exactly what Prabhupada said. As we know, there are seven planetary systems up and seven down. These things we should know. Why did Suta Goswami, he's repeating the words of Shukadeva Goswami, why did they go through all this seemingly mundane knowledge about the universe? And why didn't they just jump immediately to the pastimes of Krishna and Dwarka and like that? Because it's extremely important for us to know these things. It's extremely important. Especially nowadays, we're so contaminated with the Western or so-called scientific viewpoint of the universe, of creation, of existence, of where everything came from. Total speculation on their part. Total speculation. And as Prabhupada used to say, they're not even gentlemen. If I'm speculating about something, I'm not sure, I'm creating a theory. There's some phenomenon, I can't explain it, so I come up with a theory to explain it. So if you also come up with a theory, until one of us is proven right, then all the theories should be able to exist. But nowadays, that's not the case. You go to school, and they have the scientific theory of existence and creation, of the cosmology. And that's all they want taught. They don't want any other theory to be taught. So that's not even being a gentleman. If you're a gentleman and you're not sure about something, you've come up with some conclusion, but you can't prove it. You know, like the knock they have against religion is that you can't prove the existence of God. But you can't prove the existence of your Big Bang either. You can't prove it. You postulate, and they claim they're always refining their understanding. No, they're refining their speculation. Trying to make it make more sense than it did in the past. But it's still speculative. And if you don't go along, then you're practically, they demonize you. If you don't go along with their conclusion. Anyway. So it's very important to understand. Seven planetary systems. We should know them. What are the seven planetary systems? If you go to the yagyas that are performed periodically here, you should know. Borbhavakswak. At least those three you should know. Om Borbhavakswak. Om Borbhavakswak. So Borloka, Bhuvarloka, Swargaloka. And then above them, the four left. Maharloka, the Janaloka, Tapaloka, and then the topmost, Satyaloka. So those are the seven going up. And then going down, Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Rasatala, Mahatala, Patala Loka. So these are the seven going down. And then, I actually bookmarked this so I can read it. Because some people, again, they were, not that they were doubting Amala's conclusion, but I guess he didn't give them a reference. So there is a reference to what he said in that chapter. 26th chapter. Let's see if I can find it here. Yeah. 526.5. The great sage Shukadeva Goswami answered, because his intelligent disciple, King Parikshit, inquired. He asked him, where are the hellish planets situated? Why would he want to know that? He had 7 days to live. Why not just sit down again and just hear about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis and all? No. No. He's setting an example for us. You have to be interested in this cosmological information. Because it proves to you how great God is, how great Krishna is. If we don't assimilate this cosmology, then we're not inclined to surrender to Krishna because we don't understand how great Krishna is. So the great sage Shukadeva Goswami answered, all the hellish planets are situated in the intermediate space between the three worlds and the Garbhodak ocean. They lie on the southern side of the universe, beneath Bhumandala, and slightly above the water of the Garbhodak Ocean. Pitriloka is also located in this region between the Garbhodak Ocean and the lower planetary systems. All the residents of Pitriloka, headed by Agnishvata, meditate in great samadhi on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and always wish their families well. Now, again, being mistrained in the Western concept, we hear this, it really doesn't sink in. So that's why Prabhupada's purports are essential, because Prabhupada made it clear. Prabhupada's purport says, very short, as previously explained, below our planetary system are seven lower planetary systems, the lowest of which is called Patala Loka. Beneath Patala Loka are other planets known as Naraka Loka, or the hellish planets. At the bottom of the universe lies the Garbhodak Ocean. Therefore, the hellish planets lie between Patala Loka and the Garbhodak Ocean. Clear? Now, every one of us sitting here, we've done maybe, just like nowadays they say somebody's done, you know, three tours of duty in Iraq or Afghanistan or whatever. We've done millions of tours of duty around all these planets. We've gone to Satyaloka, we've gone down to Pataloka, we've gone to these hellish planets, Naraka Loka. If you go, it's very important again to have this knowledge. What are these hellish planets? You know, Kumbhi Paka, Krimi Bhojana, Maharaurava, all these hellish planets. How you get there, the sins that you commit to get to which of these hellish planets? Because if we know this, then we're not inclined to commit these sins again. We want to avoid them. It's very clearly described here in this fifth canto. What sins you commit and where you go because of committing such sins, and what happens to you when you get there. Like when you kill animals, those animals appear on this planet, special planet, and in the form of rurus, they're called. And these rurus continuously tear you apart. Because it's happening on a subtle plane, you don't actually die. You feel the pain, but you don't actually die. You wish you would die, but you're not allowed to die. You just go on feeling the pain. Fortunately, unlike some other religions, they believe that this goes on eternally. Which I always ask them, if you think that somebody can burn in hell eternally, that means they're not really burning. If you burn something, right, you light it, it burns, and it's gone. But if something can burn eternally, then it's not really burning. It's just the sensation of being burnt. Isn't it? First of all, it proves that you're eternal. If you believe that somebody can burn in hell eternally, that means they're eternal. They say they don't believe in reincarnation. But they believe in eternal existence, right? If you can burn eternally, that means you're eternal. But if you're burning eternally, then you're not really burning. You're just feeling the sensation of burning. So in our cosmological viewpoint that we've inherited, yes, you do go to these places where you get cut and burned and all kinds of stuff, but it doesn't last eternally. It lasts for a certain amount of, it seems like eternity when you're going through it, but there's a definite end to it, and then you're given a chance again to do the right thing, to make spiritual progress, to go back to home, back to Godhead. And that chance is given again. So, Prahlad Maharaj, being a Mahajan, he knows all these things. And he's telling his classmates, try to avoid this. Whether you consider yourself a demon because you're born in a mining family, whether you're a Gandharva, which is a special human-like species, race, that are very, very musically expert, the Gandharvas. So whether you're a Gandharva, human being, demon, whatever you are, please take shelter or worship the lotus feet of Mukunda, because that's how you can be liberated finally. The demigods can't give you liberation. It's not possible. That's why demigod worship is condemned. They can give you material benefits. You worship some demigod, you want a beautiful wife, handsome husband, or you want money or education. Yeah, they can give you that. Even that they can't give if Krishna doesn't sanction. Krishna has to sanction it. But what they cannot give you is liberation. That's why Krishna is known as Mukunda. He can give mukti. He can give liberation. So Prahlad is telling his classmates in today's verse, Worship Mukunda. That's the best occupation for everyone, no matter who you are, what your situation is in life. If you're intelligent, you realize that you're suffering in this material world and you should want to get out. And the way to get out is to worship Krishna, Mukunda. Okay, we can stop here. Any questions, comments? Yes, Deanna. You gotta turn it down a bit though. And point it away from the speaker. That's why I speak. Go ahead, turn it. Bring that first channel.
Okay. You're talking about flirting with demoniac tendencies and cleanliness, but if you're not initiated or you're not twice initiated, you're not a Brahmin, how does that cleanliness like affect you? Like, for instance, me, I'm not initiated at all. So how do I like live my life cleanliness like by Brahmin rules already? Or so like how does...
Because we're talking basic. Before you even come to Brahmana, you have to be a human being. And all human beings are supposed to be clean. Human life means you have a body that has 9 gates. And those 9 gates of the body have to be clean with water every single day. 2 eyes, 2 ears, 2 nostrils, your mouth, your genital, your anus. Every single day, those 9 gates should be clean with water. Otherwise, you're not considered clean. And therefore, we see in the Western culture, or nowadays anywhere you go in the world, they have this toilet paper culture. That's not cleanliness. Real cleanliness means after passing, you clean with water. Then the body is considered clean. So this cleanliness applies to everyone, not just to those who are already second initiated or first initiated. No, everyone. And if you're not clean, then you're inviting attack. There are ghosts. It's not a myth. It's not somebody's imagination. Ghosts exist. And because they are living entities with material desires, but they have subtle bodies through which they can't fulfill these desires, their tendency is those of them, not all of them are demonically inclined, but those that are demonically inclined, their tendency is to attack people with gross bodies so they can use your gross body to do what they want to do. And one of the ways that they are, again, that they get in is through uncleanliness. As I mentioned, that story of King Kalmashapat. If you're not clean, especially if you go to bed with dirty feet and a dirty mouth, you're inviting attack. Don't be surprised. You're going to have bad dreams. You're going to have attack from ghosts because that's the invitation. That's the invitation. If you can, but at least one, please. At least one. Many people consider themselves clean still to this day, and they only shower once or twice a week. That's not cleanliness. You can't sleep all night, sweat, get up, wash your face, and put on clean clothes and go to work. That's not cleanliness. You have to take as soon as you get up. This is the Vedic culture. Vaishnava culture is as soon as you get up, obeisance to the spiritual master. First thing you do, you pay obeisance to the spiritual master. You call out to the presiding deity of wherever you live. Jai Rukmini Dwarkadish, like that. Then you go. It's all mentioned very detailed in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which was written on the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You wanted it to be written down exactly what you should do, every ritual, every day for Vaishnava. So clean your teeth. Like I said, clean the eyes. You should get an eye cup, rinse your eyes. Clean your ears, clean your nostrils, all these things. Then you take bath, then you put on tilak, then you put on your clothes. And all this should happen before Mangal Arati, and then you come to the temple. This is Vaishnava culture. But even if you're not, don't consider yourself a Vaishnava. As a human being, you got to keep your body clean. Otherwise, you're inviting disease and attack from ghosts and stuff like that. It is essential. You must do it. It's not optional. This is cleanliness for everyone. Good question, though. Anybody else? Acharya Narottam, since you have the mic, I was going to recognize
him. Oh, sorry, Prabhu. Thank you for your wonderful, wonderful class. So you were explaining that we should know cosmology, so all these 14 planetary systems. So can you explain what is the difference between astronomy, cosmology, and astrology?
The cosmology means understanding everything that's going on in the universe, right? Astronomy is dealing specifically with the situation of planets, stars like that. And astrology means understanding how that affects the effects of the planetary movements on you as a living entity. That's astrology. So an expert astrologer, understanding how the planets were situated at the time of your birth can tell you what your whole life is going to be like. Because everything has meaning. So the exact position of the planets at the time of your birth, if they know the time and place of your birth, they know exactly how the planets are situated at that point, and they can describe your life to you. That's, and astronomy means, again, studying particular, just like we know the distance from the Earth to the Sun. That's astronomical calculation. Astronomy has to do with the situation of the planets. Cosmology means the entire thing. So you could say it's almost synonymous. So when we say the Vedic cosmological viewpoint, we mean what the Vedas inform us, that's we hear, it's all there. It's not that you have to be such a scholar. If you can, be such a scholar that you remember it all moment to moment, but at least you should know where it is. It's been given to us in written form. Previously, didn't have to be written down. Everybody practically was Shrutidhar. Shrutidhar means you heard once and you remembered for life. So it was an oral tradition. You'd go to a Gurukula, the spiritual master would recite these shlokas from his memory or her memory, and then you would remember for life. But understanding that Kali Yuga is coming, and in Kali Yuga, practically everything diminishes. This is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 12th Canto. Tatascha adurinam dharma satyam socham shamadaya. Kalina balina rajan nangshatyahur palam smritihi. Smritihi, the very last one, remembrance, is one of the things that diminishes in Kali Yuga. So understanding that, the sages wrote everything down. So we didn't have to, you know, be bereft of knowledge just because we can't remember things. So you have the book. So open it up and read it. Prabhupada used to say it, because the devotees were always so eager to go out and distribute these books. Say, I'm writing them for you. First of all, you read them and understand. Don't be so eager to go and give them to others and you haven't read them yourself. It's nice you want to distribute this knowledge, but first of all, assimilate the knowledge yourself. Otherwise, why do you want to give it to somebody else? If it's good, then you should be diving in. All right? It's just like prasadam. If you come to me with something that you say is a nice sabji, how do you know it's nice? Oh, well, I tasted it. Man, okay, then I'm willing to taste it too. But if you haven't even tasted it, how do you know it's a nice sabji? How do you know it's not too salty or too hot or whatever? Right? So if you want to give somebody something that you know is good, then you should taste it yourself. And once you've tasted it, then you can verify, yes, this is good. So it's the same thing with Prabhupada's books. If you're going to give somebody Bhagavad Gita and tell them that it's a wonderful book, you better know what's in it. Prabhupada said, they may have a right to ask you, what's in it? What did you get out of it? Oh, well, I didn't bother reading it. I just heard that it's good. I'm giving it to you. Then that's nonsense. We should take the time to read it and assimilate what's in it. All right, we'll end with Bhakti Eric. You had something?
Yeah, just a quick question. Appropriate to offer obeisances as soon as one wakes up. But I also heard another time that it's considered inappropriate to offer obeisances in an unclean state. So when you first wake up, should you clean yourself first?
And then that's a temple. You shouldn't come into the temple in an unclean state. But at home, when you get up out of bed, the first thing is you're glorifying your spiritual master. And the way you glorify your spiritual master is offer pranam. So it's a pranam mantra that you've learned. You offer that. It's not like you're going to go in, you know, let's say you're in the ashram and your guru is visiting and he's in the apartment above Suvas. He's going to run out of the ashram unclean and run and fall down in front of him. No, but at home you have a picture, it's okay. You offer your obeisances. Krishna's everywhere. Krishna's in the bathroom also. It's just like this sometimes comes up. The holy name, is it appropriate to chant the holy name when I'm in the bathroom? Yes! Krishna's there, he's in every atom. It's not like you're going to, you know, leave him somewhere else. And no, he's there. So you can chant the holy name anywhere, under any condition. No hard and fast rule. The potency is there. But in terms of coming to the temple, one should always come to the temple in a clean state. But at home, when you wake up, yes, immediately offer obeisances. Chant Hare Krishna. You don't have to wait till you take a shower to start chanting. Chant anytime, anywhere. But these rituals of cleanliness are essential for us to follow. Are essential. You must. Otherwise, again, you leave yourself open to all kinds of negative repercussions. Grantarashimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai.
because you don't need to have a t-shirt. Why you need a t-shirt?
No, because you're wearing it. You gotta go to the bathroom to do so. And you're wearing it. So you can chant the holy name in the bathroom. There is no rule and regulation. So, and it's not different from, you know, the one you're wearing in the bathroom. So.
Yeah, anyway. I don't know. Who told you that you shouldn't wear your t-shirt in the bathroom?
Anybody.